I feel a bit like Jonah today. You're probably all aware that our granny had a bit of an accident, so our life has been rather full this last few weeks. And knowing this was coming up, I had a sermon all prepared. And then last week, it got thoroughly trashed. Because what I intended to do was I intended to carry on the theme from the feast about vision. Because it just seemed to be all I could get in my mind. And I was going to go through the Lord's Prayer, so-called, the outline of prayer, and show that it's all to do with vision. And then Mr. Bowles got up and went through part of it, and I thought, well, he's kind of explained that. And Mr. Monroe also had a sideways sort of dig at it, so I thought, I'll go as far away as I can, and I'll get a completely different subject. I'll do something I've never done before. I'll go through a book of the Bible. So I don't know how quite I got into Amos, because that's what we're going to do today. We're going to go through the book of Amos. And I got into the book of Amos, and it was rather interesting. But you know what? What's the book of Amos about? It's about vision. It's about vision. You see, vision goes backwards and forwards. We can look at past events, and we can look at and understand future events. I mean, the Bible makes that quite clear. So why Amos? Well, once I'd sort of got my head around it, I suddenly realized that perhaps the reason we're going through Amos is Amos gave his warning to Israel just before Israel went into captivity. And where are we now? Well, we're in the similar type situation, aren't we? So if you turn to Amos, let's have a look at the book and see what we're actually doing here. Amos 1. The words of Amos, who was among the herdsmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel in the last days of Uzziah, the king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, the son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. Now, what was the nation of Israel like at this time? Well, we're talking about roughly 50 years before they went into captivity. Now, keep that figure in mind, because it will come up again in a minute. If you want to turn there, you can. I'll read it for you. Keep your hand in Amos, because obviously we're going to be there the whole time. 2 Chronicles 26, verse 3 says, Uzziah was 16 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. So he was around a long time. Now, verse 4 says, and he did that which was right in the sight of the Eternal. So here we have a reasonably righteous king. Verse 5, and he sought God in the days of Zechariah, who had understanding of the visions in God. And as long as he sought the Lord, God made him prosper. Now that's a basic sort of principle that we still look today. And then verses 8 to 13 point out the fact that he had a fantastic army of 300,000 plus men, every single one armed to the teeth. The country was prosperous. There was wealth. They were safe. The borders extended from Egypt right away up to the north and across into the east. In fact, this time of the king of Uzziah is the third most prosperous time in the whole of the history of Israel. First of all, you have Solomon, and then you have Jehoshaphat, and then you have Uzziah. The nation was very strong and very wealthy. They had peace. And they had peace backed by this very impressive military force. And of course, God gave them peace because he was obeying God. Nothing could have seemed more improbable than the fulfillment of Amos's warning. Yet within 50 years, the kingdom was totally destroyed. Isn't that amazing? Can we see a parallel today with America? I remember several years back having a conversation with Mr. Bowles, and we were talking about how could America possibly go down? I mean, for those of you who've never been there, it takes 8 hours in a plane to get across the thing. It is immense. It is absolutely immense. One state in America, California, ranks as if you take it as a nation, it would be number 12 in the whole world. In terms of gross national product. That's just one state. How could this colossus collapse? Anybody got any questions today? As we see it crumbling before our very eyes and crumbling from within. If we look at what happened in the church, look what's happening in the world, and you see exactly the same method, because it's exactly the same being that's doing the crumbling. And God's allowing him to do it. So where are we now, you see? Well, pretty close to 50 years after the warning went out in power. If you read Amos now, go to verse 2. And he said, the Eternal will roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem. Right? Zion, if you think about it, generally can mean the church. Now in the 60s, the lion roared. The broadcast went out even to Ephraim. When we were at college, we were thinking, how can we get the broadcast into this country? Totally impossible. The BBC had total control. There was no way on this earth you were going to ever get that message into Britain, apart from places like Radio Luxembourg, which incidentally Sheila's father came into the church from listening to that back in the late 50s. But the broadcast went out. Mr. Bowles mentions back in the 60s, he was working on the forecourt, and he'd hear cars coming in, filling up the petrol, and you could hear Mr. Ted Armstrong blazing away on the radio. It got so bad that in the British Parliament, MP Tony Benn tried to squash the message. That's right, tried to squash the message. They called them pirate ships. But that was the start of the crumbling. Amos 2, drop down to Amos 2 now. I'll tell you, because the first bit, it goes in sequence. It goes through all the nations that the prophecy affected. I want to stick to basically Israel, because that's what we're talking about. So Amos 2 verse 4. Thus says the Eternal, for three transgressions of Judah, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have despised the law of the Eternal, and have not kept his commandments, and their lies caused them to err, after which their fathers had walked. So first of all, he has a go at Judah. In verse 5, but I will send a fire upon Judah and shall devour the palaces of Jerusalem. Now, this is interesting because this event wasn't to happen for close to 150 years from the point that this was given. Because Judah went into captivity between 604 and 585 BC, whereas Israel went into captivity 721 to 718 BC. Verse 6, thus says the Eternal, for three transgressions of Israel, and for four, I will not turn away the punishment thereof, because they have sold the righteous for silver and the poor for a pair of shoes. They were not honest in their dealings. They were not honest in their dealings. I mean, I'll give you an example. You know, back in the 12th century in England, they started the thing called a baker's dozen. If you went to the baker and ordered a dozen loaves of bread, you were given 13. And the reason for that was that it was in order that the baker didn't get penalized for giving short weight. That's how important this was. Bread was sold by weight, not by the number of loaves. And they had to be a certain weight. So to stop themselves getting into trouble with the law, they would give an extra loaf. And even as a child, I can remember going to the shop and getting a dozen rolls, and you were always given 13. That's God's way of doing things, isn't it? Give them a bit extra, brim full and running over. Not anymore. Here's one of my little sins. I like chocolate. And chocolate's very good for stress, by the way. It's in the newspapers. It's official. The research was probably done by Cadbury's. I bought a packet of these little sweets that I'd chew in the car. And they were on special, and I thought, oh, that's good. So Beth's got her little chocolate drops, because they have a packet of three for £4, you see. And I thought, well, that's about 60 or 70 pence cheaper than normal. And I felt the bag. You used to get 220 grams. Now you get 140, and the bags are the same price. And this is what manufacturers are doing today. You check things carefully. You'll check, especially the packaging is the same size and the amount's been diminished. Because it's hard to make a profit nowadays. We're all battling, you see, in business. So what they're doing is you check it out. Even the Mighty Mars bar is now slightly less weight than it was, but it's the same price. And we'll, this will come up again in Amos, this very thing. Verse 9 of chapter 2. He says, "Yet I destroyed the Amorite before you, whose height was like the height of the cedars, and he was strong as the oaks. Yet I destroyed his fruit from above and his root from beneath." Now, again, just make a note of Numbers 13:32. You remember the spies, the first lot of spies that went into the land? Joshua and Caleb came back with their bunch of grapes, saying, "Come on, let's go." And everybody else was weeping and gnashing of teeth. It says, "And they brought up an evil report of the land which they had searched unto the children of Israel, saying, 'The land through which we have gone to search it is a land that they eateth up the inhabitants thereof. And all the people we saw are men of great stature. And we saw giants there, the sons of Anak.'" He said, "We were like grasshoppers." And this is what God says. "Yeah, I destroyed the Amorite." He's reminding them. "I destroyed the Amorite. Yes, they were giants, and I destroyed them." Verse 10. "Again, also, I brought you out from the land of Egypt." Now, this comes up seven times in Amos. It comes up several hundred times in the Bible. It's one of the most important things back in history that God did, because he trashed the greatest nation on the face of the earth. Just as he's going to trash the greatest nation, or is in the process of doing it right now. "I led you 40 years through the wilderness to possess the land of the Amorite. I raised up of your sons for prophets and of your young men for Nazarites." If you want to just make a note, Numbers 6, verses 1 to 21 will explain what a Nazarite is. It was somebody who, a man or a woman, who could take part of their life and dedicate it to God. They hadn't to cut their hair. They hadn't to eat, drink alcohol. They couldn't come anywhere near a dead body. So if a family member died, they couldn't go near the funeral and so on. Their life was totally dedicated for a period of time. Is this not even so, O you children of Israel, said the Eternal? "But you gave the Nazarites wine to drink and commanded the prophets, saying, 'Prophesy not.'" You see, they were just literally going totally against the way that God had set up. Not on one level. Everywhere you looked. It doesn't matter where you looked. And this same thing happened in the Church of God. We had this thing when the changeover came after Mr. Armstrong. We all used to talk about the P word. We weren't allowed to talk about the P word, which was prophecy. And the one classic example, of course, is the Berlin Wall fell. Germany was reunited. Mr. Armstrong had been preaching about that. You know, the first time Mr. Armstrong actually mentioned about Germany that I can find, I was 2 years old, 1946. When Germany was a bombed out hulk, he then said that Germany would rise up. Now that's scary. Because the only way you can know that is through divine revelation. It was totally, totally and utterly impossible. And one of the first things that the new management did in the church was trash prophecy. Take your mind off the prophecy. You know what God says about it? Verse 13, Amos 2, "Behold, I am pressed under you as a cart is pressed that is full of sheaves. You're a load on my back," God's saying. "Therefore the flight shall perish from the swift, and the strong shall not strengthen his force, neither shall the mighty deliver himself. Neither shall he that handleth the bow, and that he that is swift of foot shall not deliver himself. Neither shall he that rideth the horse deliver himself. And he that is courageous among the mighty shall flee away naked in that day," says the Eternal. In other words, and he comes into, we'll see another repeat of this in a different way in a few minutes. God's getting the point across that there is going to be no escape from his punishment. "Hear ye," Amos 3 verse 1, "hear this word that the Eternal has spoken against you, O children of Israel." Now here's the start. This comes out all the way through Amos. This is what the Eternal has spoken against you. It's God speaking. It's God that's going to do it. Get the point. That's what Amos is trying to say. And just remember, Amos was a herdsman. I kind of don't think he had a PhD somehow. He would have been probably a relatively simple man. So you know that this word that's coming out of this man is directly from God. because he would not have had this in him. Hear this word that the Eternal has spoken against you, O children of Israel, against the whole family which I brought up from the land of Egypt. There we go again, see? Amos 3:2, he says, you only have I known of all the families of the earth. God selected this people. In my people, he said. He says, therefore I will punish you for all your iniquities. Can two walk together except they be agreed? You see, if we want to follow God, we've got to become like God, because we are going to become like God. And I remember one person leaving Ambassador College, very upset after a few months. He said, you know what? He says, you're all just becoming a bunch of clones. You know? The girls are all starting to dress the same way. The fellas are all tend to get the same kind of haircut. We're all starting to believe the same kind of stuff. There's no individuality anymore. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. If you think about it, God the Father sent Jesus Christ down to this earth as the Word. He was not yet the Son of God. He had not yet been given all power. He'd been given a job to do. And he came down and did that job. But what did he say? How did he address himself to Moses? When Moses said, who shall I say sent me? He said, I am has sent you. I am. Other places he says, I am the eternal your God. Why? Because Christ, as the Word, spoke like God, acted like God, thought like God, the Father. Because that's what he's like. And in the future, when we're in the holy city, and we're sent out to the far distant regions of whatever the creation's going to be. As I said at the feast, if you think of this creation here being created by one God being, and we can't even see it all, what is it going to be like when there are tens of billions of sons of God? It boggles the mind. Because we're like him. We think like him. We act like him. And he can trust us implicitly. So yes, we are all in that sense. I mean, clones is perhaps the wrong word. But yes, the individual part of us tends to at times be the bit that we need to throw away. In big chunks. If you remember God's promise in Leviticus 26 verse 12, just make a note of it. He said, I will walk among you and I will be your God and you will be my people. You see in Amos 3 verse 3, he says, can two walk together unless they be agreed? If God's going to walk among us, we've got to be in agreement with him. We've got to be in total agreement with him. We've got to start trying to think like him so that ultimately we can be like him. If you want to go back at some stage and read Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, look at the blessings. Look at the blessings that were there originally. Look at the blessings that started in the 1800s with Ephraim and Manasseh, with Britain and America. We ruled the world. Britain, a tiny nation, took over such a huge slab of the world, and not the unimportant bits, the bits where all the resources were. And we just walked in and took it over, basically. God just gave it to us on a plate. I can always remember at school having the big globe there and all this red and all the nations back in the early 50s. Sun never set on the British Empire. And then you look at America. It's hard to comprehend the power. You know, one aircraft carrier that America has today has got more firepower than everybody slung at everybody else in the whole of the Second World War. One aircraft carrier. They got quite a few of them as well. And that's just one little tiny aspect of it. It's hard to imagine the kind of power that America even today has. And yet, it is going into captivity. And perhaps you haven't thought of this, but where does 50 years take us? Mr. Armstrong went out in power in the 60s. The 60s was the time, he said, the time of change. The time of the Beatles, the time of the occult, the time of all these Eastern religions. And all the shamans and all the other people that came in, and the Beatles going off to sit on a mountain and contemplate their navels and all the other things that they did. It was the time when the miniskirt came in. It was the time when you got boys and boys going out and girls going out. It's the time when this country fell apart morally. And by the end of the 60s, well, it was a different world. But at the end of the 60s, Mr. Armstrong had a different job. Oh, the warning still went out. It went out in great force, right up until he died. In fact, when he died, I think there was 8 million plain truths going out every month. We'd probably posted out 25 million copies of the US and GB in prophecy. It was incredible what was done. But from the 70s, Mr. Armstrong was given a different job to do. He went to kings, rulers. And one day, what I would like to do is make a complete list. I'm working on it. And every time I think I've got it, there's somebody else says, oh, he saw this guy, or he saw that guy. I don't think there's ever been anybody on this planet who has spoken to so many heads of state, kings, governors, emperors, and so on, as Mr. Armstrong. It is absolutely astounding. And the amazing thing is, he did not go to them. They invited him. Absolutely incredible. And think of the message. You see, this is the same message Mr. Armstrong gave. Amos 3, verse 6. Shall the trumpet be blown in the city and the people not be afraid? Shall there be evil in the city and the Eternal hath not done it? You see, God's the one that's going to bring this trouble on Israel. He's using Satan as a tool, but God is totally in charge. It says, and then verse 7, Amos 3, verse 7. Surely the Eternal God will do nothing, but he reveals his secret unto his servant the prophets. That is an absolute promise. And the more we look at the prophecies, the more we start getting a picture of what is coming up. And more will be revealed as we go along. Verse 8, the lion has roared, who will fear? And the Eternal God has spoken, who can but prophesy? Publish in the palaces of Ashdod and in the palaces in the land of Egypt and say, assemble yourselves upon the mountains of Samaria and behold the great tumults in the midst thereof and the oppressed in the midst thereof, total chaos. Verse 10, for they know not to do right. King James English. They no longer know right from wrong. Does that describe our society today? They know not to do right, says the Eternal, who store up violence and robbery in their palaces. Back to when Britain was great, there was a form of godliness. People went to church. People had a concept of God. Oh yes, it was all perhaps all wrong. But there was a form of godliness there. The difference between right and wrong were defined. They were taught at school. The law of the land was basically based on God's law. Do you know that in my lifetime, people were executed for rape? That's right. And today? Over 300 people in this country last year were just let off with a caution by the police. Never even got to court. Now, of course, I understand that this situation can be abused from the woman's side and it can be, you know, be just to get back at fellas. And of course, it's very difficult now to get the truth from anybody, isn't it? But that's how things have just changed in one lifetime. Today, many of our new laws are totally contrary to God's law. Technically, it's now illegal to speak out against people who do things that are contrary to God's law. As in the case of the homosexual brigade. You're not allowed to criticize them because it's a hate crime. But that's not what God says. But that's the problem. Verse 11 of chapter 3 of Amos. Therefore, thus says the Eternal God, an adversary there shall be even round about the land, and he shall bring down your strength from you, and your palaces will be spoiled. There is an adversary coming. And he goes on down there, verse 15, and I will smite the winter house and the summer house, and the houses of ivory shall perish, and the great houses shall have an end, says the Eternal. Total destruction. Just make a note of Jeremiah 4, verse 27. For it says, for thus hath the Eternal said, the whole land shall be desolate, the whole land shall be desolate. Britain, the whole land. America, the whole land. Canada, Australia, many of the Western European countries, Holland, Belgium, Denmark, Norway, all part of the ancient Israelites, whom they don't even understand who they are. He says, and yet I will not make a full end. There will be those who survive. Amos 4, verse 1. Hear this word, you kin of Bashan, that are in the mountain of Samaria, which oppress the poor and crush the needy, which say to their masters, come, bring us drink. And the Lord God has sworn by his holiness that, lo, the day shall come upon you, that he shall take you away with hooks and your posterity with fishhooks. Now, in ancient times, some of the Gentile kingdoms, when they took prisoners, they would literally put a hook through their flesh with a chain onto the next person. That's how you went into captivity. Quite a nice lot, aren't they? Amos 4, verse 6. Now, this is a section that we quote a lot of. But again, this is Amos, a humble herdsman, giving this message, keep it in mind, to the greatest nation in the area at the time, who were wealthy, who were prosperous, who were at peace, and were living it up. The last thing that it looked like was that they were going to be destroyed. But there were problems, you see. But they overlooked the problems, just as we can overlook problems today. If there's a disaster in one particular area, and the crop is wiped out, tough. Get a shipload in from someplace else. But if you check the news, you'll notice what's happening, and it's ever increasing, that there's been a problem in China with the grain. There's been a problem in Australia with the grain. There's been a problem in America with the grain. There's been a problem in South America with grain. And we're coming along, like everything else, onto a knife edge point, where suddenly there isn't going to be enough stuff out there to stick on a ship and bring it in here. And we're going to have the horrible situation where there's not a shortage of food exactly, but the price will be so high that many will not even be able to afford to buy the stuff. And that's going to lead to some major troubles. Amos 4, verse 6. And I have given you cleanness of teeth in all your cities. This is what was coming for them. And want of bread in all your places. But you've not returned to me. You see, occasionally somebody will turn around, like when Hurricane Katrina hit the States. And somebody got up and said, you know, this is God's vengeance on this city. And everybody laughed. But was it? Who controls the weather? That was just one of the little birth pains that cost America so much that they haven't rebuilt half of it yet. They did some temporary patchwork on those levees. They've not been repaired properly. It could happen again. The next big hurricane that comes through, the same thing could happen again. I also have withholden the rain from you when there was yet 3 months to harvest. And I've caused it to rain upon one city and caused it not to rain upon another city. One piece was rained upon, and the piece whereon it rained not was withered. You have this all over America. All over America this is happening. And it's happened now for several years. It's getting worse and worse and worse. Dam levels are dropping alarmingly. In fact, where we had the feast there, they had to release the water there because there's a problem with the dam. But that's happening all over America. Crops are failing. I saw an article recently where I think it's in Idaho, where they grow a lot of seed potatoes that are the next year's crop for the farmers. And a lot of it was wiped out because they had a frost 2 months early. Yes, last year in America, the ski resorts in some areas only opened around about December and closed at the end of February because there wasn't that much snow. This year, in September, they were open for business. 2 feet of snow all over the ground. It's going to be a bumper year. It's all right for skiing, but what about the farmers? What about the crops? And it gets worse than that. Verse 9. I have smitten you with blasting and mildew. When your gardens and your vineyards and your fig trees and your olive trees increased, then the palmer worm devoured them. Yet you have not returned to me. You see, when we have these disasters, now blasting and mildew, again, it's just looking at it, you can read over it. But blasting is the result of drought and mildew is the result of floods. And isn't that not what we're getting? We we drove into London today, and of course, because it's autumn, or the fall to our brethren across the puddle, the trees are falling, the leaves are falling. And with the gale we had last night, a lot of the leaves, in fact, some of the trees had fallen this morning. They were still cleaning up the mess as we drove into London. And of course, the leaves have blocked the drains. So we're driving through 6 inches of water, all through London. And we saw several of these little trucks trying to suck the leaves out of the drains. Complete shambles. That leads to mildew. We've got mildew in our house. We can't get rid of the wretched stuff. It's just dampness. But it ruins wheat. If you're trying to store wheat, it won't store. It'll be bad. You can't even use it for cattle feed, evidently. But he says, yet you've not returned to me. Amos 4 verse 10, I have sent among you the pestilence after the manner of Egypt, and your young men have I slain with the sword, and I have taken away your horses. I have made the stink of your camps to come up unto your nostrils, yet you have not returned to me. All right, I've sent among you the pestilence. Some of this pestilence can very well be man-made, like flying pig flu, as I like to call it. I'm quite convinced from what I've read that the reports of certain virologists that state that this swine flu vaccine, this swine flu bug, is made up of not one, but like three or four different viruses joined together. And that geographically, it would be impossible for them to get together by themselves. So it would seem that it was engineered. It would further seem that it was engineered because the vaccine was available 3 months after the problem was created. And a vaccine normally takes 12 months to develop. And as I brought out in the update, then they want immunity, the makers of the vaccine want immunity from prosecution. Does that not get everybody worried? And how much is it? Well, America spent, was it $3 billion on the stuff? That's just one kind of pestilence. But there's all sorts of other things. They're finding now that some of the American troops in Afghanistan have got some kind of flesh-eating bug. And you can literally see a person's flesh being eaten away as they die within an hour. And there was a description that I was going to put up in the news, but it was just too bad to put up. But they actually chopped the guy's legs off, and then they chopped them off further off to try and stop the spread of this wretched stuff. And he died. The surgeons just, what can we do? And there's been 12 cases of that in a few months. It's one of these Ebola-type things. There are all sorts of things out there. And once the country goes down, as it's going down money-wise, you're going to find that the sanitation will go down. And when the sanitation goes down, you'll find the disease will increase. And because people's bodies have been so pumped full of vaccines when they were little babies, their immune system is not working properly. And therein comes the end time problems. These pestilences, yes, God sent them, but I'll tell you what, I think man's had an awful lot to do about the spreading of them. Your young men I've slain with the sword. How often do we see this? Like daily in our newspapers. We drive right past the airfield here where they bring the bodies back. In body bags. Some shot by the very people they're trying to train to save this corrupt government in Kabul. They're terribly corrupt. See, all manner of governments are like that. But our young men are being slain by the sword. They're still being slain in Iraq. But we don't tend to publicise that very much now because, you know, we don't talk about these things. It's under the carpet. I've taken away your horses. Horses being a weapon of war. Back in 1920, I think it was, the British fleet assembled in Scapa Flow as a sort of a victory, we won the war type thing. And they took a movie from an aeroplane and they panned across the sea. And all you could see were line upon line upon line of battleships and destroyers and all the rest of it. As far as the eye could see. And they were all churning out black smoke up their funnels. Nasty. Environmentally unfriendly. That makes you laugh, doesn't it? Today, I don't know how many warships the British Navy can put out. But you know what? It's in single figures. It's in single figures, yeah. And an equal number are in dry dock because they can't afford to modernise them enough. We have an aircraft carrier with no aircraft on it. How cool is that? What's he done to our horses? What's he done to our weapons of war? We're a laughing stock. An absolute laughing stock. The next one verse is rather interesting because it could show us the way things are going. Amos 4 verse 11. I have overthrown some of you as God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, and you were as a firebrand plucked out of the burning, yet you have not returned to me. I have overthrown some of you. Could this mean, and this is a could, it's one of those speculations. Sodom and Gomorrah were whole cities that were totally wiped out in an instant. Could this happen before the end? Is this the sort of this is the sort of thing that could bring America, for instance, to its knees. If the whole San Andreas Fault went at one time, that big valley, forget the name of it now, but it's 100 miles wide and 400 miles long? 100 miles wide, 400 miles long. The breadbasket for much of America. I noticed in Kentucky the number of times you saw, product of California, California, California. That'll be gone. Those levees there, I was in the news the other day, I think you'll see the article, those levees are all in a very, very dangerous condition. They're going to have to spend hundreds of billions of dollars, which of course they'll just print anyway, because that's what we do anymore. Don't even count the cost anymore. The pumps all need replacing. And somebody said, one good trembler in that area, and a trembler is when you don't have an actual earthquake with a sliding motion, but you get this rippling effect going through it. And because the soil is the way it is, it would just literally, they'd turn it like water. And the whole area would be flooded. And there's one particular dam there, which they built. And if this goes, it will flood that valley to the depth of a foot deep. 100 miles wide, 400 miles long, a foot deep. Now that doesn't sound too bad. But what about the people in the first 30 miles when, a couple of hundred feet of water comes charging down at 300 or 400 miles an hour and totally destroys the whole place? I know when I was over at Ambassador College one time, one of the American students said, you know what? He said, if the San Andreas Fault goes and it just slides into the Pacific, he said, Ambassador College will be less than a mile from the sea. Silicon Valley will disappear. Tens of millions could die. One earthquake. Is that a possibility? Well, they're worried because in some of the fault lines on the there's a 15 meter tension. In other words, if that goes gadunk, it'll go gadunk 15 meters. Can you imagine 45 feet? That's scary. That will take an earthquake way up into the eights and beyond, which could be totally, totally devastating. So are we looking at something like that? People don't think of New York as being an area where there are earthquakes, and yet back in the 1800s, there were a couple of earthquakes up in that area that didn't kill very many people because there weren't very many people there. But mountains, quite big hills rose, rivers changed their courses, the whole topography of the land was altered. Now, we built on all that, because we seem to have this proclivity to build on floodplains or fault lines. It amazes me. We had the government the other day going on about, we're going to build all these houses, and then this global warming's going to flood all this area, and then they say you're going to build 5,000 houses in this area. And I thought, well, hold on a minute. You're going to build 5,000 houses in this area, and due to global warming, it's going to be under 50 feet of water in 10 years' time. Who's telling porkies? We live in a crazy world. Well, then comes the tribulation. Amos 4 verse 12. Therefore, thus I do unto you. Get the point here. This is what God's saying. I'm in charge. I'm in total control. This is what I'm going to do to you, O Israel. Because I will do this unto you, prepare to meet your God, O Israel. And if you understand what that really means, that kind of like should make the knees knock. If you're on the wrong side of the fence, prepare to meet your God, O Israel. And just in case you haven't got the point, he says, verse 13, for lo, he that forms the mountains and creates the wind and declares unto man what is in his thought, that makes the morning darkness and treads upon the high places of the earth, the eternal, the God of hosts is his name. That's who he's talking about, says Amos. God himself remains completely in charge. And this is what he's going to do. And keep in mind, when this message is being given, Israel was just like America was, you know, some years ago, riding the crest of the wave, master of everything they saw, on their way to going to the moon, allegedly, or whatever. Amos 5, verse 1. Hear ye this word which I take up against you, even the lamentation, O house of Israel. The virgin of Israel is fallen, she shall no more rise. She is forsaken upon her land, there is none to raise her up. For thus says the eternal God, the city that went out by 1,000 shall leave by 100, and that which went forth by 100 shall leave 10 to the house of Israel. For thus says the eternal unto the house of Israel, seek me and you will live. You see, even at this stage, God is still saying to them, come to me, acknowledge me, start living my way, start obeying me, and you'll live. But it's totally unbelievable. But they were so sure of themselves because they were prosperous. They were safe. They had plenty of food. Oh, they had the odd disaster here and so forth. That happens. Strange how they call these things an act of God. Well, they used to. Now it's all down to the God of global warming. And for those of you who aren't aware of it, on the 5th of December, there's going to be a small conference in Copenhagen in Denmark to discuss the problem of global warming. And there's going to be, are you sitting comfortably? 20,000 people at the meeting. 20,000, that's right. That's what they've said. They've booked up every hotel they can get their hands on. 20,000 people at this meeting. I wonder what their carbon footprint is. You see the madness of all this. What's also going to happen at the end of the month, of course, is that Europe becomes one nation, basically, with one leader, with one foreign secretary, and all that will be decided behind closed doors, and you won't hear a word about it, because all the newspapers and the television will be interested in is this one thing about global warming. And while that farce is being perpetrated, the beast power, the foundation of the beast power, is being laid. The players might not be the right ones, but the laws are being put into force. The framework is there. The framework is being put there. And some of the things that they brought into law, it is astounding that people have just said, okay, yeah, it's not important. They brought in some anti-terrorist laws in this country, which sounded on the surface like a good idea. But local councils are now using these anti-terrorist laws to spy on people who spread litter. Or try to tell a bit of a porky to get their child into a school that they don't live quite in that area. And they're using this terrorism legislation to drag them through the courts. So whenever you see new legislation, what you've got to try and do is look at it and say, how could they manipulate this? Because that's what they're going to do. They're trying to put legislations through for the internet. That if somebody is caught downloading too much of the wrong kind of material or whatever, you cut them off. Now, the decision isn't whether they're going to cut them off now. It's whether they're going to cut them off for a period of time as a punishment or totally cut them off. But you see, once you've got that legislation, that can be twisted to suit anything. For instance, what we are putting out, some Mr. Armstrong stuff, that could be deemed to be wrong and you could be shut down. You see, they manipulate because they're liars. That's the big problem. Just make a note of 2 Chronicles 30, verse 9, because this is so, so important, I think, to all of us, and it should be so encouraging to all of us who've got families who are all split up in different groups. Some of our children have gone completely off back into the world, my eldest one, as for the time being, and it's very discouraging on the one level. And God says, if you seek me, you'll live. Remember that? If you seek me, you'll live. 2 Chronicles 30, verse 9, just make a note of it, I'll read it to you. It says, for if you turn again unto the Eternal, your brethren and your children shall find compassion before them that lead them captive, so that they shall come again into this land. For the Eternal Lord, the Eternal your God, is gracious and merciful, and will not turn away his face from you if you return to him. That seems to me to be a promise, that those children that Well, if Lot's wife had understood this, she would not have gone back. Because I know we've talked about this, but I really can't see any other reason that she went back. She went back because of her children. Almost certainly. A mother would do this. It's the natural thing to do. But the point is, by going back there, she was doing the exact opposite. Because this is what it says. In the time that we are now living, if we go back to our children, we can be destroyed. Whereas if we go away, if we go back, follow God. God says he'll protect those children. He'll bring them right the way through the tribulation and out the other end. And those very children that you're trying to give everything for and sort everything out now. As I told one person the other day, who phoned me up. Said, but you're trying to do this and do that and do the next thing for that child, right? If you do the right thing, they'll come through the time of trouble. And then you'll be able to give them everything the right way around. Because they'll come into the kingdom of God and you'll be there to watch those children grow up the right way. And perhaps your grandchildren grow up the right way. And watch them grow in the millennium. And there is the possibility, of course, that people in the millennium will literally live up to the 1,000 years. Can you imagine that? How many children will they have? How many children will they have? Time you get to the end of the millennium, you'll be jolly glad you don't keep birthdays. If you turn again into the eternal, that's the key. But it's before the tribulation. That's got to happen. Amos 5 verse 5. Seek not Bethel, nor enter into Gilgal, and pass not over Beersheba. For Gilgal shall surely go into captivity, and Bethel shall come to naught. Seek the eternal, and you shall live. Again, it's the same thing. God repeats himself, and he repeats himself for a reason. This is an important point. Dare I say, this is a very important point. In fact, it's probably the most important point. The problem we've got, of course, is the more we seek God and the more we try to get ourselves sorted out, the opposition, of course, also mounts. Unfortunately, that's something we've got to get used to. Amos 5, verse 10. They hate him that rebukes in the gate, and they abhor him that speaks uprightly. This is going to be a problem for us. It's going to be a problem in the church. Make a note of, I think it's 1 Timothy 4, verse 3. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap upon themselves teachers having itching ears. Don't we have that now in what's left of the church, the scattered church? There are men out there calling themselves apostles. From what we can see, from God's truth, the last apostle was Mr. Armstrong. End of story. And you don't declare yourself an apostle. That's another problem, isn't it? I'm an apostle. Here's my pedestal. Follow me. Now, God drags people up. Poor old Amos was herding sheep or cattle one minute and then having to go around giving this kind of message to Israel at a time that seemed totally ludicrous. Remember, they hate him that rebukes at the gate and they abhor him that speaks uprightly. Oh yes, we're going to be dragged before courts and kings and all the rest of it. But don't expect a wonderful reception. You see, people hate the truth. People hate more being told they're wrong. I mean, even us, quite frankly, at times we find out there's something in our lives that's not right, or somebody mentions something to you, and the first reaction is, ooh, the defensive shield comes down. Then hopefully the meekness kicks in, and we say, oops, made a mistake, got to get back on track. Amos 5, verse 11. For as much therefore as your treading is upon the poor and you take from him the burdens of wheat, you have built houses of hewn stone, but you won't dwell in them. You have planted pleasant vineyards, but you shall not drink the wine of them. What God's saying here is, yeah, prosper. Build up your big cities. Build up your big vineyards. Store up all this wonderful grain and everything. You're not going to benefit by it. It's all going to be taken away. For I know your manifold transgressions and your mighty sins. They afflict the just, they take a bribe, and they turn aside the poor unto the gate from their right. Therefore the prudent shall keep silence in that time, for it is an evil time. You give an answer when you've got to give an answer. Because sometimes there's no point in speaking to some people because all you'll do is gender strife. Seek good and not evil that you may live. Here the point, God keeps on saying to people, you know, get back on track, maybe the message should be the message here, isn't it? Seek me, look at me, follow me. Hate the evil, verse 15, and love the good and establish judgment in the gate. It may be that the eternal God of hosts will be gracious unto the remnant of Joseph. This remnant that hopefully in the tribulation will suddenly turn around and say, ooh, mum and dad were right. Mr. Armstrong was right. And call out on God, and God will be merciful to them. To the remnant of Joseph. And how big is that remnant going to be? Well, it says there are a few men left on the earth. Amos 5, verse 16. Therefore the eternal, the God of hosts, the eternal says thus, wailing shall be in all the streets, and they shall say in all the highways, alas, alas, and they shall call unto the husbandman to mourning, and such as are skillful of lamentation to wailing. Because in the old days you used to hire people to moan and wail at your funeral. It saves you doing the job, I guess. But it's verse 18. Woe unto you that desire the day of the eternal. Now, who's it talking to here? To what end is it for you? The day of the eternal is darkness and not light. If a man did flee from a lion and a bear met him, or went into a house and leaned his hand on the wall and a serpent bit him, shall not the day of the eternal be darkness and not light? And even very dark and no brightness at all? So who's he talking to? Verse 21, I think, makes it quite clear. I despise your feast days. I will not smell in your solemn assemblies. Though you offer me burnt offerings and your meat offerings, I will not accept them. Neither will I regard the peace offerings of your fat beasts. Take you away from me the noise of your songs, for I will not hear the melody of your vials. But let judgment run down as water and righteousness as a mighty stream. You see, this is what God wants. And it's very interesting that one of the attacks that were made after Mr. Armstrong died was that lovely letter that said, the Sabbath and the holy days are no longer required for salvation. I keep that letter. I still have it. The thing they went for were the Sabbath. And if anybody ever challenges you on the Sabbath, you can point out one small fact to them. First of all, the Sabbath was created at creation. It's the last thing God created, right? 2,500 years later, there were Jews on the earth. 2,500 years later. So how can it be a Jewish Sabbath? Just a small point. This word righteousness, I'd like to take a minute on this because I think this is something that, it's one of those things that I know I've been tackled on a couple of times. And it's one of the big things that has happened in our original group. That the fact that the law of God has been nailed to the cross. It's not required for salvation. You see, 1 John 2:22, nice easy scripture, just to remember, just make a note. I've got three or four scriptures here, just make a note of them, and at a later stage, go through them, and you see exactly where it comes from. 1 John 2:22, who is a liar but he that denies that Jesus is the Christ, that Jesus is the Savior? He is Antichrist that denies the Father and the Son. How do you deny that Jesus is the Christ? By saying the law of God is nailed to the cross. And you can prove it with three simple scriptures. 1 John 3:4. Sin is the transgression of the law. Okay, we're all agreed on that. Romans 5:13. For sin is not imputed where there is no law. So if there is no law, you can't sin, right? But then in Romans 3:23, Paul says, all have sinned. Therefore, if everybody sinned, there's got to be a law. Is that so difficult to understand? I'll repeat it. Sin is the transgression of the law. Romans 5:13, where there's no sin, there's no sin. It's not illegal to drive down our motorways at 60 miles an hour because there's no law that says it's 60 miles an hour. It's 70 miles an hour. So you can't get a speeding ticket doing 60 unless there's a sign that tells you it's been lowered to 60 for some reason. There's no law. There's no sin. But Romans 3:23 and elsewhere says all have sinned. Sin is the transgression of the law. Therefore, the law cannot be done away with. It's that simple. Those who say the law was nailed to the cross deny that Jesus is the Saviour. Because all have sinned, we need a Saviour. We need Christ who walked in there and said, okay, you go free. I remember one time Mr. Armstrong describing it like that. The man on death row. And they come to collect him and they take him out, they chain him up. And this other man comes in and says, okay, let him go free. I'll pay his penalty. Take my life instead. That's what Christ did for us. But to deny that, but it's always the simple things they go for, isn't it? The Sabbath isn't required. The law isn't required. The Old Testament's old. And you say to them, but Christ only ever preached out of the Old Testament. Paul only ever preached out of the Old Testament. The New Testament's full of the Old Testament. Amos 5:26 says, you have borne the tabernacles of your Moloch and chewing your images, the star of your God, which you made to yourselves. Israel was steeped in idolatry. I mean, Moloch, you've heard of. This Chuan, basically, they think is an idol, and so on. Therefore, verse 27, here's the message again. Will I cause you to go into captivity beyond Damascus as the Eternal, whose name is the Eternal of Hosts? See, God's just putting his rubber stamp on this. You're going into captivity, and I'm the one sending you there. And you're going for a reason. Christ was making very sure that Israel understood who was causing them to go into captivity. 6 verse 1, Amos 6 verse 1. Woe to them that are at ease in Zion, and trust in the mountain of Samaria, which are named chief of the nations to whom the house of Israel came. Remember, this is going to the nation that was at the pinnacle of its power. They were loaded. They had everything. We've had the wealth. We're just in the process now of losing it at a dramatic rate. This same attitude, this, leave me alone, I'm easy, I'm quite comfortable, I got some money in the bank, and what they don't tell you is the credit cards are through the roof and their mortgage is £150,000, £200,000, and they're probably never, ever, ever going to get out of debt. If you remember Haggai, just to make a note, Haggai 1, it says, this speaks the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say, the time is not come, the Lord's house should be built. It's not time to do that. There's no problems. Hey, cool it. And Haggai says in verse 4, is it time for you to, who dwell in your sealed houses? Haggai says, you are all dwell in your lovely solid brick mansions, which is what a sealed house refers to. High, upper class, smashing house. God's house is lying here in a mess. Amos 6 verse 3. You that put far away the evil day and cause the seat of violence to come near. Does that describe today? Matthew 24 verse 48. But if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, and shall smite his fellow servants to eat and drink with the drunken. See, that's the attitude. People that don't have vision, people that don't believe what God's going to do to our nations, have this attitude. And haven't we seen it in so many of them? Oh, don't, it's not going to happen like that. Don't worry about it. Everything's going on for a while yet. This has got to happen, that's got to happen, the next thing's got to happen. The events that we're talking about that are going to happen, particularly as the church flees, they're going to happen so fast, one after the other, like the birth pangs. And if you're not in the right place at the right time, with the right contact with God, then you're in the wrong place. And that's the key. Verse 4 of Amos 6. That lie upon beds of ivory and stretch themselves upon their couches and eat the lambs out of the flock and the calves out of the midst of the stall. All the finest of things that you can get your hands on. That chant to the sound of the viol and invent to themselves instruments of music like David and drink wine in bowls and anoint themselves with the chief ointments. But they are not grieved for the affliction of Joseph. You see? Everything's going fine. Leave us alone. Oh, we've got a few problems here and there, but make a note of Ezekiel 9, verse 4. This is the attitude we've got to have. This is part of the vision. If we have vision, Ezekiel 9, verse 4, and the Eternal said unto him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and cry for all the abominations that are done in the midst thereof. Why are they sighing and they crying? They've got to know what's going on to sigh and cry about. Don't you feel like this sometimes when you watch the news? We had a 15-year-old boy sexually abused a 5-year-old, and he didn't even get his hand slapped. He got let to go home by the police, and the next day he went out and raped a little girl. That make you mad? What about some of the other things? The photograph all over the US newspapers, not in the British papers very much, of a drunken girl, these ladette type jobs, standing in the middle of the main street with her underwear around her ankles. Yeah, this is Britain, yee-haw! Wonderful, isn't it? God's people Israel just made a mockery of all around the world. No wonder the Muslims look at us and think we're the lowest of the low. I think in that they are very much right. Amos 6, verse 14. But behold, I will raise up against you a nation, O house of Israel, says the Eternal, the God of hosts, and they shall afflict you from the entering in of Hamath unto the river of the wilderness. In other words, right, the whole country. Now you can just make a note there of Isaiah 10, verse 5, of course, because that's the nation. O Assyrian, the leader, the man, the rod of my anger and the staff of in their hand is my indignation. When this leader, whoever he is, with the 10 kings, 10 nations, 10 groups of nations, whatever it is, this final beast power, when it destroys Britain and America and some of the Western European nations that are part of Israel, it's God's indignation. It's not just happening. And he says, I will send him against a hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil, to take the prey, and to tread them down at the mire of the streets. This is Isaiah 10, verse 7. Howbeit, he means not so, neither does his heart think so. In other words, he's not like this until I wind him up. Yes? But it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few. I've been to Germany lots of times. Do you know what? I just enjoyed it so much. The people are great. But I remember Mr. Frank Schnee, the regional director there, he said, yeah, put a bus conductor's uniform on a German and their heels click and their hand goes out. They're that kind of people. And when God winds them up, he's done it twice. Third time lucky, as far as the Germans are concerned. Amos 7, verse 7. And he showed me, and behold, the Eternal stood upon a wall made by a plumb line, and with a plumb line in his hand. And the Eternal said to me, Amos, what do you see? And I said, well, a plumb line. Then the Lord said, behold, I will set a plumb line in the midst of my people. I will not again pass by them anymore. The plumb line is used to make sure the wall is straight and true. And God holds that plumb line up, and the wall's nowhere to be seen. It's such a mess. And he says, I'm not going to hang back anymore. Amos 7, verse 9. And the high places of Isaac shall be desolate, and the sanctuaries of Israel be laid waste, and I will raise against the house of Jeroboam with a sword. Now here's the next attitude we can watch out for. Amos 7, verse 10. Then Amaziah, the priest of Bethel, sent to Jeroboam, king of Israel, saying, Amos has conspired against you in the midst of the house of Israel, and the land is not able to bear his words. Yeah. Here you have the church stirring up the state. This is what's going to happen in the beast power. The Catholic Church will argue they've never killed anybody. Let me tell you, they've been responsible for several hundred million deaths over the last 1,000 years, and that's conservative. But they don't kill people. They get the civil authorities to do it. And there you have it. You have the priest going to the king saying, they're talking against you. Oh, great king. See, I'm polishing my marble. The land can't bear his words. Let's sort him out. That's the accusation. Amos has conspired against you. And then Amos 7 verse 11. And thus Amos said, Jeroboam shall die by the sword, and Israel surely shall be led away captive out of their own land. That's the message that he brought, you see. Jeroboam's going to die by the sword, and Israel's going to be taken captive. And this is the priest now going to the king saying, this is what this crazy is saying here. He's a crazy, he's a nutter. Let's get rid of him. In the end, Amaziah in verse 7, verse 12, he comes to Amos and he says, oh, thou seer, go flee you away to the land of Judah and there eat bread and prophesy there. But prophesy not again anymore in Bethel, for it is the king's chapel, it is the king's court. Go away, leave us in peace. Just a small point I forgot to mention here. Amos lived in Judah. Tekoa was near Jerusalem, and he was sent to Israel. Mr. Armstrong's roots were Jewish. He traces his lineage back to King David, but he prophesied against Israel. See, the parallels are quite astonishing when you go into it. And then Amos enters his defense in 7 verse 14. And then Amos said to Amaziah, I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was a herdsman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit, which I think is actually wild figs. And the Eternal took me as I followed the flock, and the Lord said to me, go prophesy unto my people Israel. Now therefore you hear the word of the Eternal. You say, prophesy not against Israel, and drop not thy word against the house of Isaac. Talking about the whole house of Israel. Therefore, thus says the Eternal. Now this is to Amaziah. This is one-on-one, eyeball to eyeball. Your wife shall be a harlot in the city, and your sons and your daughters shall fall by the sword, and your land will be divided by line, and you will die in a polluted land, and Israel shall surely be led away captive from his own land. Nice, sir. Do you want the job? I certainly would like to have to go to the leader of a nation and give him that kind of message. But you know, God's got a sense of humor if you think about it. He sent another man, Ezekiel. He sent Ezekiel with a prophecy to the house of Israel, right? That's right. There's a small problem or two, though. You see, because Ezekiel was in Judah, and Judah was in captivity, and Israel had already gone into captivity 100-odd years before. So how can he do the job? You see, the book of Ezekiel is written for us. It's on today. Mr. Armstrong, if you go into US and GB in prophecy, and that's a book we really, really, really need to read again. It's another one of these where they've stuck an extra 4 chapters in it. I was just stunned, you know, going through. I haven't got time to go through this section here. But yeah. Ezekiel was given that job. Isn't that crazy? To give a man a job when he's in captivity in one land to prophesy against another nation that went into captivity over 100 years previously. Mr. Armstrong delivered that same message to modern day Israel when it was at the height of its power in the 60s. Amos 8 verse 4. Hear this, O ye that swallow up the needy, even to make the poor of the land to fail. Now, do we do that today? Well, how about this in America? The US government forced the banks to give out loans to people that didn't qualify to buy property. The wonderful idea was, you see, that we come to you and we say, right, you can have not 100% mortgage, you can have 120 or 130% mortgage. So you buy your $100,000 or $200,000 house or whatever it is, and we'll give you an extra $20,000 or $30,000 or $40,000 on top to go and buy your car, have a holiday, furnish your house, and so on. Because for the first 4 years, you only pay the interest on the mortgage, which is minimal. And at the end of 4 years, you remortgage the house, but by that time, the values, because they're going up at a set rate, the value of the house will then be more than the value that you've paid for it, and you've had all this extra money. And it was cool. And of course, they lent all this money out. And the rest, as they say, is history. It did not work. Those poor people are now worse off than they ever were. They've lost all the, any credit rating they would have ever had is gone. The buildings and the goods and chattels that they've acquired has all gone. And they're in a worse mess now than they were 4 years ago when they bought the house. So do we oppress the poor and the needy? You betcha. And the answer to Amos 8 verse 5. And he says here, when will the new moon be gone? You see, this is the attitude of people today. That we may sell corn, and the Sabbath, that we may set forth wheat, making the ephah small and the shekel great. Small measure, big charge. We're back to the bag of sweets that suddenly lost 60 grams. But the price is still the same. In fact, it's not the same. It's on special. It's very special if you're running the sweet factory. Making the ephah small and the shekel great, and falsifying the balance by deceit. You see, this is what God hates. He hates people that deceive people. But our whole society is based on this today. Everything's set out to deceive. You don't know what you're buying. I was laughing the other day. I'm trying to put some money together to buy some particular thing. And I saw an article in the paper that somebody had just bought a dog. And it bought this wretched animal, and it cost them £800. And all they have is a bit of paper saying, it's mum and dad with this, it's mum and dad with that. Oh, that's wonderful. Hey, it's a dog. It can keel over dead. You go into the nursery, they've got these lovely big koi carp. This big. Two and a half foot long. They make a great meal. Yeah? £600 for a fish that could be belly up the next morning if it doesn't like your pond. I don't even know which bits to leave in and which bits to leave out here. There's just so much in this book. Let's go on down to chapter 8, verse 10. And I will turn your feasts into mourning and your songs into lamentation. I will bring sackcloth upon your loins and baldness on every head. And I will make it as a mourning of an only son, and the end thereof as a bitter day. People are going to feel like their only son's died, and it's just the worst day in their life, right? Now, baldness on every head is interesting, because baldness on every head could well be caused by the fallout from atomic weapons, because that's one of the things that evidently happen to people who are within a certain distance that actually survive. Their hair all literally falls out. Mr. Armstrong, writing in U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, says, God warns us through prophecy that our sins are fast increasing, and now the day of reckoning is here. The foreign sword always has attacked us. In this fearsome atomic age, World War III will start with nuclear devastation unleashed on London, Birmingham, Manchester, Liverpool, New York, Washington, Philadelphia, Detroit, Chicago, Pittsburgh, without warning. God help our nations to wake up before it's too late. Is he right? The worrying thing is about this, you see, is people aren't listening to it. Was he right about the Berlin Wall? Was he right about Germany becoming the greatest nation in Europe? Was he right about the Berlin Wall reunification? Was he right about the fall of the Soviet Union and all those nations free to join Europe? Yes, 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 yes. And now he's saying this is going to happen. Is he something going to be wrong? I don't think so. Remember 1 Thessalonians 5, it says, when they say peace and safety, sudden destruction comes on them. The timing is at the beginning of the Great Tribulation. What happens just after that? Amos 8:11. Behold, the days come, says the eternal God, that I will send a famine in the land, not a famine of bread, nor a thirst of water, but of the hearing of the word of God. And they shall wander from sea to sea, and from north even to the east. They shall run to and fro and seek the word of the Eternal, and shall not find it. Why? Again, let Mr. Armstrong give us the answer. Pastor General's report, November 20th, 1979. The time we're in now is the heading. Now Daniel 12:12. Blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1335 days. Never before have we understood these periods of 1260, 1290, and 1335 days. This is when the understanding came that you actually you came back from the return of Christ. So you come back 1260, come back 1290, come back 1335. It seems evident now, a blessing is pronounced on us, God's church, who wait and endure until the 1335 days, approximately 1335 days prior to Christ's coming. Three things he gives. Apparently, this is the time when our work shall end. Why? Well, the second part, the second thing is, that will be a time when the united Europe shall appear, the revival of the medieval Holy Roman Empire. It could be very well when the beast, or the one that will become the beast, is revealed. He could look like a savior. They're all shouting peace and safety. Why? Because somebody stood up and says, here's the way we can sort the mess out. And 10 nations, 10 kings or whatever give their power to him. And all this is going to happen in a very, very, very short space of time. And the third thing is, we will be warned and ready to be taken to a place of refuge and safety from the great tribulation. The key point there is the work ends. That computer, you can switch it off and throw it in the trash can. There'll be no more internet. There'll be no more access to Mr. Armstrong's words. There are several sites out there that have got stacks of Mr. Armstrong stuff on them. It's brilliant. You can search right back, right way back into the 30s. They'll all be gone. Shut off. When the new internet is opened up, totally under the control of the master race. End of story. Amos 9 verse 1. Oh, sorry, I missed that one little bit here. This is actually interesting. This is the end of this Pastor General's report. 45 days later, this is at the 1290 point, the beast armies will surround Jerusalem. 30 days later, the Great Tribulation will probably start with a nuclear attack on London and Britain, and possibly the same day or immediately after on United States and Canadian cities. The message doesn't change, does it? No escape from the wrath of God. Amos 9 verse 1. I saw the Eternal standing upon the altar, and he said, smite the lintel and the door, and the posts will shake, and cut them in the head, all of them. And I will slay the last of them with the sword. He that fleeth of them shall not flee away. He that escapes of them shall not be delivered. Even though they dig into hell, dig into the ground, hence my hand shall take them, or they climb up into the heaven, jump in the space shuttle, I'll bring them down. In verse 9. And though they hide themselves in the top of Mount Carmel, I will search and take them hence. And though they be hid from my sight at the bottom of the sea, therefore I will command the serpent and he'll bite them. And though they go into captivity before their enemies, thence will I command the sword and it shall slay them. And I will set my eyes upon them for evil and not for good. Ezekiel 5 verse 12. Just write it down. He says, I'll scatter a third part of them into the winds and draw the sword out after them. Even into captivity, they'll still be persecuted. That's why our children, if they go through this, they'll be given favor. They'll survive. And the Eternal Lord of Hosts, this is 9 verse 5, is he that touches the land, and it shall melt, and all that dwell therein shall mourn, and it shall rise up wholly like a flood, and shall be drowned as by the flood of Egypt. How did the flood of Egypt happen? Suddenly, wham! It didn't take months. You didn't have to wait 7 years for famines to develop. It happened, splat, one shot, real quickly. Amos 9 verse 8. Behold, the eyes of the Eternal upon the sinful kingdom, and I will destroy it from off the face of the earth, saving that I will not utterly destroy the house of Jacob. You see, there are survivors. There are people who make it through into the beginning of the millennium. For lo, I will command, and I will sift the house of Israel among all nations, like as corn is sifted in a sieve. Yet shall not the least grain fall upon the earth. All the sinners of my people shall die by the sword, which say, the evil shall not overtake or prevent us. So the people that seek God will get refuge, and the people that turn around and say, we're going to get out of this mess, won't. The only way out will be that they turn. Bring up a child in the way that he shall go, and when he is old, it says, he will not depart from it. And I think in some cases with some of our children who are out of the church, it's when they are old. When they're in this mess, then they'll remember. Then they'll turn. Then they'll seek God. And then God will protect them. This is part of the vision. So here we are. We're getting right at the end here. Amos 9 verse 13. You see, you can't get away from this thing of vision. And I think this is perhaps what God is trying to impress on us. If we are as close to the end as several things would seem to indicate, the one thing we've simply got to have is vision. Because any time now, we could have monumental disasters happening. This whole banking system, it's based on sand. I put an article up on the news on yesterday, where they're talking about some of the assets that the banks are actually talking about. They're claiming they're assets, and they're not. There's something like tax credits and so on. They don't mean a thing. They're hot air. The same as printing all this alleged money, which isn't actually printed in most cases. Somebody goes on to a computer and says, how many? A trillion. They've just gone to the Senate now to get the national debt raised from 12.1 trillion up a little bit. Oh, that's another couple of hundred billion when you're 12 trillion in debt. Remember what a trillion is? 100 goes in 2 carrier bags. A million, brother, goes in a couple of supermarket bags, yeah? £1 million, right? £1 billion, you know the pallets, the standard pallets, you see, you know, 4 foot square in a supermarket, 3 foot high, that's $1 billion, sorry. That's $1 billion. $1 trillion is a whole acre covered with these pallets, too deep. That's $1 trillion. As one man said, America can never hope to repay this debt. Amos 9, in closing. Here's the end of the message that God gave to this poor man, a humble herdsman who had to face up to a king. Behold, the days come, says the Eternal, that the plowman shall overtake the reaper, and the treader of grapes him that sows seeds, and the mountains shall drop sweet wine, and all the hills shall melt. Amos 9 verse 14, and I will bring again the captivity of my people of Israel, and they shall build the waste places and inhabit them. And they shall plant the vineyards and drink the wine thereof. And they shall also make gardens and eat of the fruit of them. And I will plant them in their land, and they shall no more be pulled out of their land, which I have given them, says the Eternal, thy God. That's the message. It's all about vision. And you see, I wasn't going to do that, was I?